You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I cover the Chicago Bears for NBC Sports Chicago, and I cover the NFL for Pro Football Focus. Locked On Bears is your podcast destination for daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. Today it is Crossover Wednesday, so we'll be joined by Brian Peacock, the host of Locked On 49ers, and he's going to give us the scoop on a 49ers team that is all of a sudden making a little bit of noise at the end of the season and playing spoiler to potential playoff teams. We'll find out if the Bears are walking into a trap game, and we'll talk about what Nick Mullins has done to kind of keep their winning hopes still alive here, even as the 49ers don't have a ton to play for. They're not a team that the Bears can just overlook as they look ahead to the playoffs. I think after listening to me and Brian go back and forth on these two teams, I think you'll find Sunday's matchup against the 49ers a little bit more intriguing than you might have first thought. With that, I'll turn it over to Brian.
All right, here we are, another Locked On Podcast Network Wednesday crossover episode. Brian Peacock here of Locked On 49ers. I'm with Lauren Cox of Locked On Bears. Always a pleasure, Lauren. How are you, sir?
It seems like we've been able to do these quite a bit the last couple of years with the Bears and 49ers coming across each other, and it's always a good time when we get together for these.
Absolutely. You know, I was thinking the last time I talked to you, I think it was last year, but I think we actually in the offseason did, I think you joined me as part of the mock draft where I had, you know, people mocking for their teams, and you had a Bears pick, but I can't remember who you chose in our mock draft for the Bears. It might have been Roquan Smith, actually.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Now that I think about it, because Roquan wasn't there for the 49ers when the 49ers were picking. I do remember that.
Yeah, probably would have been Roquan, or if there was a top pass rusher still sitting on the board, I might have gone that direction, because that was the pre-Khalil Mack days, but yeah, probably Roquan.
Right. Yeah, Khalil Mack, that's a good place to start. He's not bad, huh?
Yeah, you know, that's a worthwhile trade that has certainly paid off. And, you know, now he's getting that Pro Bowl nod, adding some nice hardware to this pass rush for the Bears defense. But clearly a defensive player of the year candidate, someone in fringe MVP discussions, at the least among some of the national NFL media, although hard for a non-quarterback to win that nowadays. And clearly just a complete and utter difference maker. And, you know, everything you hear about Khalil Mack, all the hyperbole that you might think, it's pretty much all true for how big of an impact he's had on this defense.
So now you touched on something there, and I think we've got to get into this because the Pro Bowlers were announced Tuesday, and one of the massive snubs for the 49ers, Kyle Juszczyk made it, George Kittle made it, and I think those are both deserving, but they've got a guy, DeForest Buckner, who has had a great season, 11 sacks so far this year. And I know it's a stacked position in the NFC, but Akeem Hicks is the guy for the Bears that got the nod. So for 49ers fans out there that don't know a lot about Akeem Hicks, why was he a Pro Bowler and DeForest Buckner got the snub?
Well, most Bears fans felt Akeem Hicks should have made the Pro Bowl last season. I think he had 8 sacks to his name and really kind of had his first breakout. But, you know, the Bears defense and, the Bears as a whole as a 6-10 team, you know, they didn't get that much, you know, recognition, or 5-11, excuse me, that much recognition, and their defense wasn't so well renowned. And so you come into this season and Akeem Hicks continues to play at or maybe even slightly above the level we saw last year. He's up to 6 sacks now through 14 games and really just making plays in the backfield as a pass rusher and a run defender. He's kind of just continued that on a more prolific platform with a guy like Khalil Mack bringing a lot of attention to what this Bears defense is doing. He's just a consistent interior defensive lineman. He benefited from being listed on that defensive tackle position, I believe, versus the defensive end position on the Pro Bowl, which can kind of bring in some other like 4-3, you know, pass rushers on the end. And the Pro Bowl thing is weird and turns into a popularity contest. And right now, Akeem Hicks is getting that popularity.
And that happens a lot where guys get it the year after they were supposed to get it. And it's actually been a couple of years now for DeForest Buckner where you felt like he could get it. And there's just so many good players at that position. You know, obviously Aaron Donald's going to be in there. And then there's your second cousin, Fletcher Cox, who's got the name recognition as well. So I understand the guys that did make it. And it's tough for DeForest Buckner. And he did get named an alternate. But, yeah, it's man, it's just such a stacked position. Very good players. Akeem Hicks is very. There was an Akeem Nicks too, or no, Hakeem Nicks is who I'm thinking. Yeah. Yeah, very confusing. But yeah, Akeem Hicks, very worthy of the award. And most of the time, I don't pay attention to those things. The Pro Bowl and the MVP, because it's such a flaw. You know, the Hall of Fame voting too is one of the conversations that people love to get into. I usually don't get involved in it just because it's so weird and there's politics and there's popularity contests and it's like, whatever. I know how I feel about the players, and to me that's really all that matters.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those things where, you know, when it goes in favor of the team you root for, it's like, oh, look at how great this Pro Bowl recognition is for all my players. And then as soon as it goes against and your players are snubbed, it's like, well, you know, the Pro Bowl is not that big of a deal anyway. So I think you've seen a lot of Bears fans kind of swing completely in that opposite direction from last year, that, you know, with Hicks getting snubbed and really no one making it in recent years for the Bears. Now, all of a sudden, it's a much bigger deal. It's a much bigger honor and a much bigger recognition with all these Bears players in. But I did want to get your take on, you know, the two 49ers that did make it. Obviously, Juszczyk at the fullback position, it's only so much of a limited role. But I think, I don't know if people outside of San Francisco necessarily appreciate how good George Kittle is. I mean, I'm sure his fantasy owners out there all have really benefited from that. But I think people in Chicago might think, you know, mid-round pick out of Iowa, he's got some pretty impressive stats. If you haven't watched George Kittle this year, what has been so impressive with him, and why has he been able to produce at the level he has?
Well, there's multiple things going on with George Kittle. First of all, and I think the number one thing that gets lost, especially, you know, with the fantasy football numbers, which is probably why he does have the recognition he has, is the fantasy football stuff. But he's a really good blocker, too. So he is a complete player. He's a complete tight end. And actually, the blocking was further along than the receiving coming out of Iowa, because they just don't chuck the ball a lot at Iowa. And I actually just read an article recently, I believe it was on The Athletic, and it was scouts. It was John Middlecoff, I believe, was asking scouts about what they thought about Kittle coming out and what they missed on him or what they got right. And basically they said that out of Iowa, there was a little bit of a rumbling that maybe he didn't have the greatest football character, and they didn't really sell him as this huge impactful player and impactful prospect to teams that were coming to visit Iowa, which is super surprising, because the way I see him play is with his hair on fire. He's an animal out there. He does have a little bit of fun, but there was an awesome quote in that article that one of the scouts said, yeah, bad football character at Iowa is good football character in the SEC. So I guess you got to take that kind of stuff with a grain of salt. But when it comes to George Kittle, it's the physicality. It's the way he plays. He just plays all out all the time. And it's the speed. He's got legitimate height, weight, speed. Like, his triangle numbers coming out of the combine were right on par with first round tight end OJ Howard. 6'4", 250, and he ran a 4.52. And he plays with that speed. You see him get the ball in the open field, and he's on pace to set a record for the most yards after catch for a tight end. And he's way ahead of even Travis Kelce in that mark right now this year. So it's a fantastic season. He's a complete player. He plays hard. He fits right in with what Kyle Shanahan likes to do. He can take a short pass the distance. He has 370 plus yard receptions this season. So yeah, he's been everything the 49ers could have wanted. And he's basically the crown jewel right now of the John Lynch of both of his first two drafts as GM of the 49ers.
Yeah, I know I'm looking long and hard at keeping George Kittle on my DraftKings lineup this weekend. And if you want to join in on the fun with us here on the Locked On Podcast Network, you just have to download the DraftKings app and go and join the Locked On Listener League so you can play with Brian and me and everyone else in the network. They're also introducing single game fantasy football as the newest way to play one day fantasy at DraftKings. If you've been thinking about trying it out, now is the time, because DraftKings has taken fantasy football from just 1 week to just one game, making it that much easier to draft your lineup. All you have to do is draft six players from a single football game with one captain and five other players, and that captain earns 1.5 times the points, so you can either go for value or really try and push the star power to anchor your lineup. It's that simple. Six players, one game, just stay under the salary cap like usual and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Just go to DraftKings.com or download the app and use the promo code LOCKEDON to enter a single game contest for free this week with your first deposit and compete for your share of over $1 million in total prizes. That's code LOCKEDON, L-O-C-K-E-D-O-N, only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Up next, Brian and I turn our attention to Mitchell Trubisky and the Bears offense before wrapping up with our predictions for the game. Keep it locked right here on Locked On Bears. We're here with Brian Peacock, host of Locked On 49ers here on the Locked On Podcast Network for this crossover Wednesday edition of Locked On Bears. And Brian, it's certainly hard to see Kyle Shanahan and end up going to who was his third quarterback in Nick Mullins and blame him for an overwhelming amount of the failure from the outside. But, you know, the way you describe his offense there of kind of wanting to be able to do everything with the same kind of base group of people, I think it's a similar description to what Vic Fangio tries to do defensively in Chicago in terms of, you know, I mean, every team plays mostly out of their nickel package now, but you don't see the Bears make a ton of changes, even in the front seven. They'll rotate a couple of different defensive linemen in there at times just to give a breather here and there, and they'll do occasionally a slightly different look in the front if, you know, if they're trying to particularly stop the run in certain situations. But this is a defensive coordinator and a defense that will sit in, you know, the coverages that they like to run. It's single deep. They're not, you know, they'll disguise it a little bit here and there, but they're not going to run a lot of the cover two and the man to man underneath or any kind of, you know, major variations. They trust their pass rush to get home to not allow the quarterback to dissect their coverage over and over again, and they trust their defensive backs here to make plays when they get the opportunity and to cover and to be able to freelance a little bit. And it's what you're starting to see, I think, be a huge difference in Chicago that maybe Shanahan hasn't had enough time to establish in San Francisco, is just when you have had the same group of people running the same system now for, you know, Fangio's been here for four seasons. A lot of these starters have been here for at least three of them. That's, I think, why you're starting to see this Bears defense take that next step and really emerge as a top, really top three unit in the NFL. And maybe that's where you're still waiting to see a younger and still, I guess, solidifying 49ers team maybe get up to that point.
Right, and we're definitely seeing that with, and I think that's one of the reasons why in year one and two for Kyle Shanahan, the offense has looked so much better in the second half of the year, and it finished so strong. Even though Garoppolo had just shown up, everybody else had played for the full season in his offense, so I think that helped, and he might have simplified things at the end of the season, which might have helped a little bit too in that run that Garoppolo made last year. And then this year you're seeing it with Nick Mullins, who's in his second year in the offense, and has obviously done his homework behind the scenes before he got his shot. So when he did get his shot, he was ready. And I think for 49ers fans, they're hoping to see that now on the defensive side of the ball in year two with Robert Saleh, because there was so much miscommunications on defense, and they try to do some exotic things and have a lot of zone coverage and make checks. And, you know, the guys have to know what's going on. And there's a lot of miscommunications and guys running wide open down the field and people pointing at each other. So I think, you know, ideally, Robert Saleh's defense starts to look like Vic Fangio's, whereas people know what's going on and people have been in the system for a couple of years and it starts to get a lot easier. But to your point about Vic Fangio, yeah, 49ers fans are very familiar with him. And that was one of the things with Fangio when he was in San Francisco is, I mean, I don't want to use the term vanilla, but it was not exotic. He didn't like to bring a lot of blitzes. He wanted to let his horses play. And so when I saw Khalil Mack go to the Bears, I thought, oh man, that's just going to help everything so much, because when you can get home without bringing extra pressure and your front four can get there, much like the 49ers were able to with Aldon Smith and Justin Smith and you know, that group that the 49ers had, which was very good, it just makes everything else go on defense and you don't have to overcompensate for anything. And we're seeing that with Fangio. He's got his horses and his defense is sound. And man, that's the Bears, I think, right now are a team to beat, because with what Nagy's got going on offense, and they've got the running game and the dual-headed running backs there with some dynamic Tariq Cohen plays out of the backfield, that's a scary team to face right now. The one question I have, and I would love to hear how this is going right now with the Bears, is Mitch Trubisky. He's had his ups and downs. There was a period of a couple games where you're like, okay, this guy's throwing for 350 yards a game and three touchdowns. He's arrived. He's got his offensive-minded coach now, and he's home. But then, yeah, maybe some missteps here and there. What's going on with Mitch Trubisky, and will he hold you back, or do you think the Bears are legitimate Super Bowl contenders as currently constructed?
I think they've I think in any given Sunday, they could beat any team in the NFL as constructed. But there is a lot of volatility with what we've seen from Mitchell Trubisky, particularly as of late. That, you know, he was injured back, I believe, on a Sunday night game against the Vikings late in that one. And he missed a couple games against the Lions and Giants and then came back against the Rams 2 weeks ago and really struggled and kind of stepped back maybe a little bit to where he had been early on in the season and had to get the wheels rolling again. Then last week against the Packers, came out with one of his most efficient performances of the season. And, you know, he did plenty, you know, he did enough to get the team to the win. It wasn't as though he carried the team, and maybe he's not at the point yet where he can truly put this team on his back and will them to a win individually. I think that's the big question mark that's still kind of lingering with Mitch is, you know, is he that far along in his career? And up to this point, it doesn't seem like he is. But, you know, when you get to the playoffs and you really get in those critical situations, that's when that question is truly going to be answered. But at this point, the Bears have found a very successful formula with, obviously, you know, lights out defensive play, usually turnovers involved and maybe even defensive or special team scoring in there. And then offensively, Mitchell Trubisky just needs to take care of the ball, you know, not turn it over, not hurting his team, and just kind of take what the scheme creates for him, what the defense is going to give him, and, you know, move the ball effectively between the 20s. And then execution in the red zone has kind of been one of the big differences this year as to how the Bears offense has just had so much more success, because they're not really running the ball that well. I mean, from a season-long standpoint, they've had some spurts with Jordan Howard, but for the most part, they're an average to below average running team. But from a scheme standpoint, Matt Nagy does a great job of putting Mitch in position to be successful. The receivers do a good job of making plays both before and after the catch to make things easier on Mitch. And then as long as he takes care of the ball and can make a few key throws downfield to mix in, that's always been, or has consistently been, enough to put this Bears team over the top. Even though he's not maybe the reason they win, he's not holding them back either. He's more in efficient game manager mode, and this team is built to be able to win with that.
And, you know, an interesting storyline with this game is that trade that the Bears made to move up to get Mitchell Trubisky in the 2017 draft. And, you know, I think, you know, whether or not he's arrived fully yet, you know, he was only a 1 year starter at North Carolina. And I think his actual physical skills and his attributes have maybe been undersold to football fans out there, because he's got a great arm, he's got a great release, he's athletic. I like a lot of the traits that Mitch Trubisky has, so I think, you know, there's a ton of, and I'm sure John Fox, I'm sure you can attest to this, but John Fox probably did Mitch Trubisky no favors as his head coach for the beginning of his career. But under Matt Nagy, I think there's a lot to come with Mitch Trubisky, and we may not see that until his second full year under Matt Nagy, which is scary with that defense and the way that team is built right now. So they're built for the long haul, I think, right now, are the Chicago Bears. But that 2017 draft, because the Bears got absolutely crushed for that trade up. And when you look at the 2017 draft right now, besides Mitch Trubisky, you have what, a Pro Bowl? Did he make the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, Eddie Jackson made the Pro Bowl at safety, and Tariq Cohen made the Pro Bowl as the return man. So two Pro Bowlers out of those five draft picks right now.
Yeah, and you have a franchise quarterback on top of it. That's a home run draft. So that just goes to show you, man, the knee-jerk reactions on draft day after draft grades mean jack.
Yeah, there have been a lot of Bears fans have sat on that feeling and that bitterness towards, you know, not all 49ers fans, but there was plenty of that. I think the word that was thrown around was that the Bears were fleeced by the 49ers in that trade up. And, you know, it's easy to point to, well, here are the Bears players that have had success, and here are the 49ers players that haven't, and say, well, the Bears were the winners there. But, you know, it's all about resources at the time. And there was certainly reasons for both teams to want to make that deal. That's why they agreed to the deal. And I think both teams left that trade feeling pretty good about what they came out with. And obviously, other circumstances have pretty well affected some of those players' ability to be successful, but I think both teams are still feeling pretty good about what they got out of that deal.
And if you're listening to this podcast looking to feel good about what you get out of a deal, then you need to check out our friends at Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing with heat on demand at the touch of a button. It's the perfect gift idea for any family or friend on your holiday gift list, especially anyone who works outdoors, skiers, snowboarders, or just anybody who hates being cold. Right now, we've got a special deal for Locked On podcast listeners. You can save 20% off your entire order if you just go to actionheat.com/lockedon and check out everything Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon, or use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout to save that 20%. Whether it's heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layers and long johns, you can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat. Still to come on today's podcast, we get into some of the individual matchups that could decide the final result of the Bears-49ers game. That's next on Locked On Bears.
All right, back again here with the Locked On 49ers Wednesday crossover show. Brian Peacock of Locked On 49ers here, along with Lauren Cox of Locked On Bears. So we talked a lot earlier about Vic Fangio's defense and George Kittle. One thing I want to ask you matchup-wise is, how do you expect the Bears to match up with, and how have they so far this year matched up with tight ends that they're going against?
So, as you know, from a Vic Fangio standpoint, it's not, the Bears don't seem to necessarily, you know, really key in on a player with, you know, they're gonna stick one safety on this player and follow him around everywhere he goes, or, you know, they're gonna make sure one linebacker. They do a good job of, you know, paying key attention to where certain players are lining up, and I think their players recognize where the mismatches can be, and that, you know, their safeties will maybe shade slightly to one side of the field if they know where Kittle's gonna be. I think we've seen them do similar things earlier this season against other tight ends, where they're not quote-unquote double covering a player or even running necessarily a bracket coverage, but it's more that, you know, when you have a linebacker and a safety both in the middle of the field, they're just going to stay a little bit closer to George Kittle even when another receiver might run near their zone. It's just sort of more attention is going to be paid to a Kittle, and they've done a pretty good job of being able to take away players in that sense. But what's really the key here for the Bears to take away a player like this is that pass rush, believe it or not. That A, you know, if they can force Kyle Shanahan to leave Kittle in pass protection, maybe a little bit more, or at least have to chip to help Khalil Mack, it just slows Kittle's release from the line of scrimmage and doesn't allow him to necessarily get as much time to run his route and create that separation. But B, if that pass rush can, you know, force Shanahan to have to hurry the throws a little bit more to get his quarterback to hurry the throws and hurry up the offense a little bit more, there's less time for Kittle to get downfield and for those longer plays to develop. And we've seen Vic Fangio very content to let, you know, Jared Goff and company throw the short route, throw the little 3-yard dump off to your tight end, and they'll tackle him for 4 yards and they'll get you in third and medium and live off that all day. So I think it comes back to the pass rush first and foremost, and then, you know, individually in coverage, they're going to pay a little bit tighter attention to him than anybody else.
Yeah, and it's going to be another tough task for, you know, obviously Joe Staley, who's been a stalwart for the 49ers, but the rookie Mike McGlinchey, who did a great job a couple of weeks ago against Broncos pass rush and especially Von Miller. And so this is going to be another tough task against Khalil Mack for that, for those offensive tackles, and it's going to be a fun one. I love seeing the young guys, and it's been fun the last couple of weeks watching some of the younger players on the 49ers show up, and they're winning games with these guys, and the undrafted quarterback leading the team to victories against some pretty good defenses. So that's been a bright spot to end the season for the 49ers, even though they're ruining their draft status right now in the Nick Bosa Bowl that a lot of 49ers fans were starting to get warm up to the idea of drafting Nick Bosa number one. Not completely out of the question still, but it's looking a little bit more shaky. Hey, Lauren, one more thing I want to ask you about matchup-wise is, so Tariq Cohen out of the backfield, who's just a jitterbug, and he kind of trades off games where he goes off and then maybe only has one catch or two catches. I'm looking back at the Bears' schedule and going against the same scheme, obviously coached a little bit differently and different personnel, but week two, if you remember, all the way back to week two against Seattle, and Cohen didn't have the greatest game, only one catch for 17 yards. Was it just that they hadn't worked him in a lot yet this season, or did that scheme cause troubles for Tariq Cohen?
So I would say a little bit of both. I think the Seahawks were able to match up with him, you know, maybe slightly better than other teams have, although
Bobby, you know, Wagner helps.
Bobby Wagner, I think, was out for that game, but they put Shaquem Griffin on him a little bit, and he was able to keep up with some speed there. Although they still got a little bit out of him, but that was also some struggles from Mitchell Trubisky in that game. It was right after a disappointing week one, and still he wasn't playing quite up at the level that they needed him to in that game. And it was a struggling performance for the team to throw the ball downfield. In that, they took a lot of quick curls to Allen Robinson, and that was kind of the Bears' MO this season, is that they'll often kind of like work one receiver into the the game plan, at least primarily, and kind of take what that receiver will get. So like early on, it was Allen Robinson the first couple weeks had big games. Then they went to Taylor Gabriel and really taking the top off defenses for some deep throws for a number of games. And they kind of mixed Cohen in there. But, you know, despite him, you know, that was probably his worst game of the season. And in spite of those types of performances, like, it still feels like even when he only has a couple catches that there hasn't really been many times when he isn't playing some sort of a major factor, whether it's ripping off a 20-yard run that they just need to kind of spark him at one point, or it's the multi-catch games where he's really that true receiving threat. He is the underlying engine of this Bears offense, that they kind of come and go as he goes, and that he is the thing that kind of sparks them to have the success that they've had. So you're wise to point him out as kind of the number one thing to look at. I mean, Allen Robinson has the name recognition, and Taylor Gabriel's had some success, and Trey Burton's the new tight end that they paid from the Eagles to try and kind of add that middle of the field dimension. But this is a Tariq Cohen-based offense at this point. His ability to run so much pre-snap motion to help Trubisky identify the coverage, to play wide receiver so regularly and run routes downfield like a receiver. He's kind of their go-to. He's kind of the playmaker that can be, you know, can flip the field and be that true difference maker out there. And that is going to be the challenge for the 49ers, that, you know, Fred Warner and Malcolm Smith, these linebackers in particular, are going to get matched up on them. And, you know, even the safeties too. No one's really found a great way for just one person to do it. But if they really kind of clamp down on him, you know, the Bears can go to other options. They don't like to go to other options. But you have seen when they successfully have Cohen taken away, it does play a pretty significant role on their lack of offensive success. What about on the 49ers side of the ball? When you look at some of their new additions, you know, matching up with Allen Robinson, for example, Richard Sherman, how has he bounced back from injury end to his years in Seattle? And kind of what is the state of this 49ers secondary as a whole?
Well, first of all, injuries have ravaged the secondary, and they've had some disappointing returning starters there too. Jaquaski Tartt's been hurt and hasn't played as well as he looked last year down the stretch. Same with Adrian Colbert, who was plugged in as the starting free safety after getting drafted in the seventh round in 2017. He was disappointing to start the season, then got hurt. So they've just been bouncing guys in and out. This last week, 2017 third rounder Akella Witherspoon, who's the guy they wanted to win that cornerback job, he's been up and down this year, and he started to play well towards the end of the season. Now he sprained his PCL, I believe it was, or MCL, one of the two. He's on IR now officially, so it's going to be a third round 2018 draft pick, Tarvarius Moore, the rest of the way playing that right cornerback spot. And really every single team has just not worried about Richard Sherman. So on one hand, Richard Sherman's played really well because he hasn't given up a lot of receptions this year. I don't know the exact number, but he's got to be near leading the league in receptions allowed. And I know earlier on in the season, he was far and away leading as far as snaps played per reception allowed, but teams just aren't worried about it. They're like, well, Richard Sherman's over there, let's just throw against the other side. And they've had great success throwing away from Richard Sherman. So I would expect that Matt Nagy's going to do the same thing and just not even test Sherman because he doesn't really have to. So it's going to be a big test for the rookie Tarvarius Moore, who height, weight, speed wise is a freak, 6'2", and ran 4.3s at the combine. And actually, no, I think that was pro day, 'cause I don't know if he got, I think he was a combine snub actually and didn't get invited, but he's got all the athleticism in the world, played safety though at Southern Miss in college. And so we'll see how he looks. And he's definitely a physical player, and he looked ready to go as soon as he went in against the Seahawks. He got beat for a touchdown on one of the first two plays once he replaced Akella Witherspoon. He got beat by Doug Baldwin, which tends to happen, but he stepped up after that, short memory and all the cliches there, and he was physical, and they kept trying him late in the game, and he made a couple plays on the ball and wasn't having it. So I liked what I saw from him in that first sample against the Seahawks, so we'll see if he keeps that going in the next couple of weeks and proves that with all that physical ability, he might be the guy who's that starter across from Richard Sherman to go into 2019. But it's been banged up, and they've got a sixth-rounder, Marcel Harris, playing strong safety, who's looked off and on okay. He had a really bad start the first game he got plugged in there against the Seahawks, but has looked much better the last couple of weeks. And they've got Antoine Exum, the veteran, at free safety that's playing because they've had so many injuries. So yeah, it's been rough aside from Richard Sherman in the secondary. And I would imagine that the Bears, just like everybody else in the league this year against the 49ers, just targets, just throws away from Richard Sherman all day.
Well, the other one big thing that I'm kind of looking at in this game is the pass rush for the 49ers. That the Bears have done a pretty solid job of keeping Mitchell Trubisky protected in the last couple weeks, and it's helped him, especially against the Packers, really kind of get back on track. And, you know, you look at the 49ers front seven, obviously Buckner, we already talked about, a potential Pro Bowl snub with 11 sacks this year. That's kind of the one you circle.
Snub.
But everybody else, I mean, is there anyone else kind of flying under the radar that the Bears should be concerned about? I mean, I know Ronald Blair is pretty good in the rotation, but, I mean, what else is there from a pass rushing standpoint, or is that kind of the big problem for the 49ers?
Yeah, you hit it. That's been the big problem for the 49ers, especially coming off the edge. They've had no edge pressure this year, and I think that's why apparently they threw down an offer for Khalil Mack that was on par with what the Bears were offering, but the Raiders chose the Bears over the 49ers. I don't know exactly what that offer was, if it was better or worse, but they knew that that was a need, and it continues to be a need, and I think that's something they're going to attack hard in free agency and probably the draft in the 2019 offseason. But they've had a lack of outside pressure. Ronald Blair in the rotation's been nice. They're still trying to figure out what to do with Solomon Thomas. The last couple of weeks, actually, a bright spot, not so much as a pass rusher, but as a run defender, is nose tackle DJ Jones, who's been really stout inside, and he's really helped the run defense the last couple of weeks. They held Philip Lindsay well under 100 yards in week 14, so he's been a bright spot along the line, and they've had some rotational guys that have looked good at times, and Ronald Blair, you mentioned, is a player I really like. Eric Armstead has had some really good Pro Football Focus numbers. He lacks that last bit of burst and that last bit of range that someone like DeForest Buckner has to actually get the sacks and get to the quarterback. But he's a guy that creates pressures and is pretty good against the run. And he's a very big and strong guy built from the same mold as DeForest Buckner. So they've got some talent up front, better run defending front than pass rushers aside from DeForest Buckner.
So as we look at this actual matchup here, I was surprised to see that the Bears are only favored by 4 points given how they've played recently. And I know the 49ers are coming off of a couple big wins here, but still, a 4-10 team versus what would the Bears be now, 10-4, if I'm not mistaken, heading into this matchup? I would just think Vegas might see this as farther apart, but instead here we are, merely more than a field goal in this matchup. What are your feelings on how this could go down? Do you think the 49ers have a pretty strong chance at a trap game here, or are you lacking confidence heading into this one?
You know, I haven't had confidence at all, and so now that I gain a little confidence is probably when the 49ers will completely fold. But it was the same last week against the Seahawks. I was surprised that the Seahawks were only favored 3.5 points, and Vegas seems to know something that everybody else doesn't. It's amazing every time. And so if you pick the 49ers, you were a winner last week. And maybe it's the way to go again, because the 49ers are playing good. They're at home. And what's interesting about this game is I think it potentially could be so tight. I think the over-under on this one is 42.5 at my bookie, which is the second lowest over-under in the league, aside from the Jaguars-Dolphins game. So it could be tight. Even if one team really takes control of the game, it could still be fairly low scoring and somewhat tight. So last week it was the big kick return from Richie James that was the big haymaker blow that I think really propelled the 49ers to that win. And so this week we'll see if the 49ers can make a big play and avoid giving up some big plays. And they could definitely hang within 4 points of the Bears. But at this point, it's still hard for a 4-10 win. A team like the 49ers with 4 wins to beat a team like the Bears that are playing so well right now. So staying within 4 makes some sense. Beating the Bears is another story. I would say something like 27-21 Bears.
Yeah, I was leaning something pretty similar that I think some Bears fans, I mean, certainly when you win the NFC North and you're on top of the world, the Bears feel invincible right now. But I do think the 49ers will be able to play them tough, that it's not going to be a blowout in my opinion. And I think the 49ers might play them a little bit closer than people think, and I agree with you that that 4 number isn't actually terrible, you know, as much as I wonder why it's so close. I would lean something pretty low, like a 21-17 or maybe a 24-20 type of a final outcome, where it's a nice little back and forth, but both teams make some mistakes, and ultimately the Bears pull away at the end, and maybe it's a tied in the third quarter like the Bears have been in too many games this season. But it should be a fun one, and it's not going to be, in theory, it doesn't seem like it should be one of these totally just wasted week 16 games where it's boring and nobody wants to watch it. Even though, you know, the 49ers aren't playing for much and the Bears have kind of clinched what they want to clinch, I still think there's some fun storylines in this one, and it's going to be a closer game than their records might suggest.
I totally agree. It's going to be a fun one, and it's another big test for Nick Mullins to see if he can, and this is his biggest test yet, the most complete collection on defense, I think, that he's going to go up against, because they have the pass rush and they have the secondary to back up that pass rush, and so it's going to be a fun one, and we'll see if the 49ers young players can show up for the third straight week.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm glad we're able to do something like this on the Locked On Podcast Network, getting the local experts on both teams. I really appreciate all your 49ers insight, and I really enjoy every time we get to do these.
Absolutely, Lauren, and let's do it again maybe in the offseason.
Yeah, I was going to say the playoffs, but we'll get there in the offseason.
2019 playoffs, we'll do it.
There you go. It'll be the Garoppolo versus Trubisky in the NFC Championship game. We'll be there.
I like it. Let's do it.
Thanks again to Brian Peacock from Locked On 49ers for joining us on this Crossover Wednesday edition of Locked On Bears. If you enjoyed our conversation, make sure you subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss out on any of the daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. And do us a favor, tell a friend, tell a fellow Chicago Bears fan about Locked On Bears, and share the podcast you love with the people you love. Join us again tomorrow for some Bears Pro Bowl talk. Talk about the finally deserved recognition for guys like Akeem Hicks, but we'll also look at who else on the Bears still got snubbed and didn't punch their ticket to the All-Star game in Florida. It is cool to see these Bears players finally start to get some of the recognition they deserve, and it's a great reason to bear down.